This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
From the Portland Sports Arena.
Wrestling fans, Bob Caudle and Johnny Weaver. Welcome to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, the most exciting.
2-7 CFAC Calgary.
Again, good afternoon, everyone. We're bringing you Mat Time action from the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary.
Well, well, well. The bells are ringing, but not for me and my gal. You guessed it. They're ringing for another edition of Stampede Wrestling. And hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's me, Travis. We're here for our continued look at the history of the Stampede territory here on Titans of Wrestling, the Place to Be Nation. Oh, Pro Wrestling Only Network, I should say now, right?
Yes.
And I'm here, as always, with Kelly. Kelly, how are you?
I am doing well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also, you know, I'm in a weird kind of, like, still having recovered. For those of you, we didn't mention it on this podcast, but I had mentioned on Lucha Afterground that I'm a longtime fan of the Cleveland Indians. And we went through another big heartbreak, but it was an incredible game.
Amazing, you know, game.
I'll remember that tying run forever, and right. I think, you know, people will remember the finish to this game and like the celebration and stuff. But I think that is the real, that's that home run is something that just a single play that will live on a little bit more, you know.
Oh yeah, like, it's going to be, you know, talked about as one of the greatest games ever for the you know, rest of time, basically.
Yeah, and Frank Kona had said it's just an honor to be a part of a game like that. And yeah, that's the way it felt like when you were watching it. You just kind of knew that, okay, every once in a while this happens in baseball where something really, really special happens that doesn't really happen in other sports, and that was it. But so I wanted to get into, but based on that, remember we talked about how, or you talked about, and yeah, I definitely agreed that when Brett was on his way up, it was like cheering for a big sports team. Mm-hmm. And so it was like this great euphoria when he was finally champ and, know, at the top of the card and like the guy. I'm trying to think of the flip side of that is, was there like a big heartbreaking disappointment? I mean, the obvious one that comes to mind is, the screw job, but do you remember feeling... You know what I mean?
Like Bret Hart or for just in wrestling in general? Or?
But why don't we make it wrestling in general?
Well, I mean, the obvious one for me for Bret Hart is WrestleMania 9. Yeah. And, you know, that was his moment finally in the main event of WrestleMania where only basically Hulk Hogan had tread before. And to lose the way he did to Yokozuna, and then just to top it all off, have Hogan come out of nowhere and take the title in an impromptu match. It was that's still to this day my darkest memory as a wrestling fan.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It felt like it was a last minute Vince change too, right?
I think it was like in Brett's book, he talks about not being told the finish until the day of the show. So
it's
anyway, that for me, that's like the equivalent of like, you know, the Flames losing game 7 in 2004. Sure. You know, the Eagles for me, Philadelphia Eagles are my favorite NFL team, them losing the Super Bowl. Actually, the same year as the Flames lost the Stanley Cup. That was a rough rough year. Well, it was a great year, but it ended in disappointment. But,
yeah. Oh, well. It's one of those things, man, when you emotionally invest yourself into something. And for me, it's just, you know, I don't have a choice because these things happened when I was a kid, you know, they were embedded in me and, you know, I could fight it, but, and there are times when I do, but it's just something that, it's there. It's like family.
Totally.
Speaking of, the Stampede Wrestling family, I did want to talk about, we've been hearing from a fan of the show, Trevor Howlett, who is a musician in Alberta, that he had tweeted at the writer of the book, The Pride and the Passion, The History of Stampede Wrestling, Heath McCoy, that he had just finished his book and he really enjoyed it. So, of course, like the opportunist that I am, I'm like, hey, Trevor, if you like this, you got to check out our podcast. And surprisingly enough, Trevor responded and said, I found out about Heath's book through your podcast. And he's like, I hope you guys do 10 episodes. I'm like, that's awesome. That's great. So I, and also, you know, it's great to move that book and it's great that, you know, somebody's making money here, right?
Yeah. Somebody. Yeah. It's not us. That's for sure.
So that was cool. But also speaking of, as I said, the Stampede Wrestling family, there is currently a GoFundMe for Dynamite Kid, whose health is not the best right now, and it sounds like things are getting quite expensive. Heath McCoy had tweeted at us just to make things aware. He's kind of suggesting that WWE should go ahead and foot the bill. I don't think that's a bad idea because it's like good PR on, like, if you want to look at things cynically or whatever.
Yeah.
But
Plus they've funded health bills for a lot of wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamite's the back injury that he suffered that really, you know, led to his current condition, or as far as his like paralysis goes, happened in a WWF ring.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So. Mm-hmm. It's really a bad situation. Really sad ending right now.
And there's like, you know, this is a guy who's burned bridges, right? Is notoriously like, didn't he turn down Brett's offer to pay for his hospital bills at one point, I believe?
Yeah, he may have. I mean, he's basically been a recluse in England, living in like government subsidized housing for 20 years or so now.
No pension plans. No pension plans for wrestlers.
No.
So I mean, like, there is a GoFundMe. I had retweeted it. I'll see if I can find it again and put it up again. If you do want to help out, there's a way to do it. So from there, should we go on? Do you have anything else to add? That's right. I almost forgot. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the great Dan Crawford, a famous wrestler we talked about in Stampede from the 70s, basically the top babyface of the territory at the time. Travis, you brought this to my attention just before we started recording. Maybe you could explain it a bit better.
Crawford, Dan Crawford, right?
Yes.
Dan Crawford, we had reported... is still active in, you know, philanthropy in the Calgary area. He's like a councilman or something for, or he was at some point for Cochrane, which is a suburb of Calgary. And around this time last year, as I was explaining, in Canada, we hand out poppies in order for Remembrance Day, which is like our Veterans Day. Yeah. Everyone wears poppies. And you just give a donation to these boxes that are set up at corner stores and drug stores and supermarkets and things like that. Yeah. And I guess some kids were, or I shouldn't say, I think kids, could be anybody, was stealing, they were stealing these poppy donation boxes. And so last year, with cooperation with, I'm trying to remember, Cornish, John Cornish, I can't remember. I don't know if this was last year or even a couple of years before. We had reported mentioned that there was a report of him starting up a charity to raise money for the veterans to make up for this lost funds. And they exceeded their goal.
Mm-hmm.
But so this year he has apparently developed some sort of a new poppy device that they can put in more high risk areas of theft that has that locks it down or something. So
yeah.
This has turned into somewhat of a pet project for him, it sounds like, or I guess passion project, something he really cares about. And as we had said back then, he's still playing the babyface in real life, and it continues to this day.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the article online from the Calgary Herald, and the writer mentions how he was the guy who came up with the idea for the ladder match. So, you know, it's
great.
He's a creative guy. He's an innovative guy. Yeah,
that's really cool. That's a tease for our main event today.
Yes. Yeah. There we go.
That was something else. So yeah, it's really cool. And again, I mean, I feel like I'm like when we do get to the end of this, I'll have some spiel about the community in Calgary and the just the overall feeling of community from the people in Calgary and the surrounding area that you don't really see much around. And this is definitely an example of it. And we keep seeing it in different forms as we watch all this stuff. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that brings us to, we're going to finish off our look at the 70s footage that was on the WWE Network. And our so we're looking at the fifth one in chronological order today, which is a week from the last one we reviewed, June 22nd, 1979. And right away, I considered starting the podcast with Eddie's first little poem he did, but it's kind of out of context. But I'll go for it right now.
Okay.
I have searched the whole world over, and there's no one who can ravage the English language half to death like a guy named Duke the Savage. He's like, you like that? It's yours. Yeah, he's got his, you know, he's helping us out. He's, you know, he's an English teacher at the same time here.
Yeah.
So that was funny. And so that was our introduction to, in this footage anyway, to Duke Savage.
Yeah.
Duke the Savage or Duke Savage?
Just Duke Savage. Yeah.
He's in a match against Bruce Hart. What can you tell me about Duke the Savage?
Well, not a lot. I don't know if I probably heard of him. I mean, but I didn't know much about him. And then I looked up on wrestling data what I could find, as I always do, for the obscure wrestlers. And it looks like he started in the 60s, around 1966.
Yeah, you definitely got the idea that this was later in his career.
Yes. And yeah. He wrestled in Calgary in 74 and 75. And that's brought up on the show by Ed.
In the footage, yeah. It's a five-year storyline.
Yeah, so he had history there. He wrestled as Apache Gringo in a lot of different areas in the States, though, which is kind of a good name.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, you get the First Nations and or the Native Americans and the Latinos.
Yeah, exactly.
Covered in one fell swoop. Yeah.
And that was in Kansas City, Amarillo, other places. And there was no results for him after 1979 in Calgary. So according to wrestling data, this was his swan song as a wrestler, run.
That could have what we see could have been his last match very well.
You know, he has a few more matches, but not too many. And he looks like a jobber, basically. Like a total job guy.
Yeah. But with some personality.
We'll get to his
interview. So the match begins. It's kind of mid cross arm choke on Bruce. As you mentioned, Sandy Scott's the referee. And right away, we're told we were excited. We thought we were going to see another Stomper match. And Ed says that the Stomper couldn't make it. He's in the hospital in Tennessee.
Yes.
That sucks.
Which is a reference to his Mongolian Stomper days, basically, right? Because he usually wrestled in Tennessee. So.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It does suck. Yeah.
Because they were promoting it like literally a week before. So I wonder how much turnaround time they had to kind of, you know, I guess they don't have to worry so much about building a card for TV.
Yeah, I mean, there would have to be considering the travel, like he probably was wrestling in Tennessee at the time.
Mm, yeah.
you know, it just may have just fallen through, like if he needed to get there by plane or what, you know, there may not have been much of a window and he missed it or something. Or maybe he actually was hurt. Who knows?
Yep.
I have no idea.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah. Could have seen the legend one more time. So Ed right away starts or mentions that this is the third match on the card and really sells the live show, which was part of their, you know, the Stampede gimmick, you know, once in a while. And, you know, he really sells the weekly shows later. I don't know if it was in this episode or the next one, but there was weekly shows in Saskatoon, Regina, Edmonton, and bi-weekly shows in Red Deer, and then plus the Montana dates, right? So, like, there was a real cycle here.
Stampede Loop was the biggest of all the territories. It covered the most ground. It was huge. Alberta, Saskatchewan, into Manitoba, into BC, and then Montana. You know, and then later years, they went all the way up to the Northwest Territories for shows. So it was just insane the ground they had to cover for, you know, not a ton of money a lot of times.
That's where these stories from these buses or trucks full or vans full of wrestlers all come from, right? They're on the road constantly, it sounds like. So I know we're mid-match here, but Savage really seems worn out without doing a lot of work at this point.
No.
Until finally he hits like a nasty atomic drop on Bruce, where I don't know if Bruce landed kind of further back on it, but it looked like right on a really bad part of your tailbone. Bruce with some good closed fists. Looks like he'd been studying his dad. Not as lethal as his dad's, but and a little not as in close, that's for sure. But they look good.
And then it
gets turned around. So there's some really nice stomps on Bruce's arms, but Savage is just not much for energy. But still, it seemed at least he's concentrating on Bruce's arm, and Bruce sold it really well too. There's a point where he's just like lying on the ring, and his arm is just like he can't even move it. I noticed there were a couple heel fans in the audience tonight. Could you hear them?
Yes, quite audibly chanting for Savage.
And later in the show too, you can hear very clearly a kick him in the balls. Every once in a while, you can hear this guy is he's not like I bet you there's probably like maybe four or five of them who are clapping for the heel, I think, but they're right by one of the mics, so it's always picked up.
Yeah, they were basically older versions than we were, you know, in the 90s.
That's right.
The equivalent, the 1979 equivalent of our crew in 1993.
That's true. I do think Duke may have switched arms at some point when he was working on him, but whatever. So he tosses Bruce out of the ring, and then when Bruce is on the apron, drives his head into the ring post, or his arm into the ring post, I guess, and gets disqualified. This is where you really hear that Duke has a few fans because they're cheering for him. It goes to the interview with Ed, and it's where I made the observation that I think he sounds like a Bostonian Rip Taylor.
He's from New England, I believe.
But doesn't he totally remind you of, like, Rip Taylor? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He's about to start throwing confetti into the crowd. So he left 5 years ago, and this is when we start to hear about the old storyline of when he was last in Calgary. He left because after the most despicable act in the annals of wrestling history, he's like, Stu Hart fractured my jaw in three places. And he said, I couldn't even talk. I'm sucking soup through a straw.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He's like, and he starts calling. He's like, now he's got his cronies. And I said, anyone who has the nerve and the capacity, I welcome them. and he kind of leaves on the way out. He's like, there's going to be a lot of bleeding hearts. We get a nice little, you know, ribbon on the bow as Ed is so good to it with these heel interviews and says, I kind of wish I'd seen him when he was speechless.
How can you not love that,
man? I know.
I don't get the hate for Ed Whalen.
No. I think it's just the it has to just be the editing. Like I can't see anything beyond that, if not from the footage we've seen.
No, I don't know. A lot of people rag on the commentary, rag on him, you know, cutting off the heels and not making them look strong, blah blah blah. I think irrational.
Yeah, I think that does happen a little more in the later things, as we talked about when he.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Because that's what most people have seen.
Yeah, most people are familiar. Well, majority of people today, as wrestling fans, are familiar with late '80s Ed Whalen and not the earlier days. So yeah. There's definitely a drop off in quality. But
that was another great one, another gem.
Oh yeah.
Our next match, which is this one is somewhat timely because of the recent death of Frenchie Martin, right?
Yes.
It's Don Gagne, aka Frenchie Martin, versus Hubert Gallant. I haven't read the most recent Observer, but I believe Meltzer, he had briefly mentioned in like the later notes of last week's that he was going to, like, he had mentioned the death of him and was going to do a more full bio.
I've read the first few pages of this week's Observer, so not far enough in to know if he did actually do that. Meltzer is known for sometimes delaying things because, he's got so much to cover.
Yep.
And for someone like Frenchie Martin, who wasn't exactly, may he rest in peace. He wasn't a huge, huge name in wrestling history. Yep. His bio may get pushed, but it may be in this issue. I'm not sure.
Yeah. At least there's the possibility of a more, extensive look at him.
I'm really interested to read it because he had an interesting career. He was heavily involved in Puerto Rico in the 70s as one of the top heels there, as one of the Martel brothers with Michelle Martel, Rick Martel's older brother.
Yeah, we hear about that later.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I guess we can skip to that. Quickly, tell me about the Michelle Martel story.
Well, they were a tag team in Puerto Rico. Frenchie Martin played Pierre Martel. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, like Ed says Michelle Martel died in a bout in the ring. I don't think it was an in-ring death, but it may have been.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the story happens. Yeah, he died while in Puerto Rico. He wasn't very old. He was still in his
33, they said.
Yeah, very young. I think it was a heart attack, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rick had to come from Quebec to Puerto Rico to take his body or his brother's body back to Quebec.
Jeez.
And it ended up getting lost on the way back. It went like from one plane to another. When I did, I think it was Rick Martel's bio on Titans years ago, I told this story about the body getting lost. And of course, we had some good laughs, like a Weekend at Bernie's type thing about it then. I've matured a bit.
I was just thinking this could like legitimately be a really great script, man. Like just to start with the match in which he passes on, and then go from there, from the phone call to Rick, is your inciting incident, and then he has to go and pick it up and encounters all this craziness on the way back. I mean, again, we're making light of things here, but
it's quite Titans a story. Of wrestling.
Yeah.
We always make.
I guess that's a good point.
I can't remember the whole story now, but at some point the body got lost, and I guess it eventually got back to Quebec, but.
Hmm.
Of course, it was hard. I mean, Rick was very young, and they were close because they wrestled together, and that's how Rick got into wrestling. So yeah, it was a big loss for Rick Martel, and it was interesting for Ed to bring it up because he's Frenchie Martin doesn't even wrestle as Pierre Martel here; he wrestles as Don Gagne.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So we start with it's in the early going of the match. Gagne's hair is great. I noticed that right away.
Yeah.
It's kind of got it all like kind of gelled up and not quite a pompadour, but just looks slick. Eddie mentioned he says he hails from the Republic of Quebec, which is there's instant heat right there.
Yeah.
And you hear, then you really start to hear the guy cheering for the heels when Gagne has grabbed Hubert. Or it's Hubert Glant he's against here. And he grabs his hair to get out of a hold. And one of the heel fans says, no hair, ref. And then, come on, Gagne, pull his arm off. He's just like when he's got him locked in this this arm lock that was used a lot. A lot of mat work. Hubert Glant gets a good pop when he turns the tables. This is where Ed mentions those shows coming up. He also says some of it is, Glant is definitely pitching and Gagne is catching. It's like, I'm not sure if that had the same connotations back then. I just didn't the earlier, like whatever, they were working hard for this in this mat work, but there was not a ton of variety to the mat work they were doing. It was the same hold that both of them were doing back and forth to each other. And, you know, they had the intensity there, but mix it up a little bit. That's what I was finding early on.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, I kind of liked the mat work. It was nice to see a change of pace. They were doing things that they put thought behind, and it wasn't just random. Like they were telling a story.
Yeah, but I mean, we also learned that there was some an element of stalling with for what the finish of the match that we never got to see was it was just going to end in a draw. And it was just like, it was just kind of starting to get interesting. Like, Gagne was doing some really nice, subtle chicken shit heel stuff where he's just like not wanting to lock up anymore. Like he had known like, wait a second, I'm not going to win with this. With this armbar I've been relying on. I mean, I get it. It's just, especially because it just kind of fades out, right?
Oh, yeah. Who knows? I don't even know how much time was left. Yeah. Ed said it went to a 30-minute draw. I don't think this was too far into it.
It was early going. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So it was probably like 20 minutes left.
So so that mat work would have had more of a payoff, I guess, if I would have... Yeah, we were just kind of getting the kind of moose-boosh here, you know?
Yeah. No, it was interesting to see... Frenchie Martin this young. There's not a ton of footage of him out there that I'm aware of when he was sort of in his prime, so this was cool to see. But total tease this match. I mean, just fades away.
Yeah, and see, this is the kind of thing I can see people taking issue with, you know?
Yeah, but I was thinking about this earlier this week about the complaints about Stampede TV and, you know, all the cutting and stuff, but Stampede was unique in that their TV show was footage exclusively from like their main show, the show that they were building towards. And that was the biggest show in the territory.
I get it.
Whereas most of the territories had, you know, the studio shows where they filmed a bunch of matches, you know, tons and tons of stuff, but none of it was important. None of it, as far as like none of them were main event matches.
Like house show equivalents.
Yeah, so this was like the equivalent of Stampede showing, you know, Madison Square Garden footage as their weekly show. Whereas in the WWF, you had Allentown tapings, Hamburg, Pennsylvania tapings. That was what they showed on Saturdays.
Yeah, no.
So it's obvious. Yeah, this is why they cut it. They can't show you the whole cards because you're supposed to be paying to watch this. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it, and we're learning that. It's meant to be watched as a show, and if whatever storylines they're trying to push and wrestlers are trying to push and feuds they're trying to push or they're going to put in there, but I guess it's the hardest of the hardcore who are just looking for matches in a vacuum, right? That's the thing that you can't.
Yeah, because this is all you have of Stampede. Like Stampede didn't have like another TV show where they had full matches like other territories did.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're a hardcore fan, a hardcore collector of footage and hardcore into, you know, grading matches and all that sort of stuff, Stampede will be disappointing to you for sure.
Yeah. And you know, but that's not the way it's meant to be absorbed.
No.
I would argue there's a different lens to try to, you know, pick the stuff apart.
Oh, totally.
So, I should mention before the end of that match, Stu, or pardon me, Eddie mentions the Stampede show coming up, and it sounds like they're really building to it. And those are the matches, or those are the events I want to see.
Right, like, Stampede Week. Yeah, that was their, you know, for lack of a better term, their WrestleMania. That was their biggest show of the year at the Corral.
Yeah.
You know, where they could get, you know, 5,000 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That show, or pardon me, that match just fades out, and it fades into the next match, and we find out that match was a draw, and the next match is Sakurada and Hito against Keith and Brett again, which is great. The winner faces Dory Funk Jr. and Larry Lane for the international tag titles at the Stampede show. Mm-hmm. We're 15 minutes in, and right away, Hito with some of that great work. I think Sakurada is really, really good too. These guys are just super dependable. But Sakurada tried that belly to belly where Brett kind of landed on his face.
Yeah, that was totally awkward.
But no, there was great stuff between the two of them. Really good heat. Solid backbreaker from Sakurada. And Hito with this awesome power bomb that kind of came out of like the tombstone position. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Really cool. Great battle. Brett finally tags Keith. Hito with just so much great stuff in this match I had written down here. And Keith with an outside cradle to win, in kind of surprisingly. So that's great. So that sounds like that would have been a match at Stampede Week to see.
I love Hito and Sakurada too.
Yeah,
great. Tons of suplexes. And Brett was really good selling in this match. That was my other big note.
This was a really good action there. And the next interview was with Stu and Brett, and Stu says that the Japanese boys have asked for a return match. And Bruce is in a... Oh, no, Stu and Bruce were in the ring.
Bruce.
Pardon
yeah,
me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Bruce is in a white cowboy hat and a sling. And Stu brings up again Savage's grudge from... He said it might have been 2 or 3 years ago, and they'd said 5 years ago before. And Bruce is just kind of soft spoken as always. I think it's a good touch that he's wearing the white cowboy hat.
Yeah, of course.
So have you been watching Westworld?
Westworld? No, I'm aware of it, but no, I haven't been watching it.
It's something else, brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Because I love the original movie.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, you're gonna love it, dude. Oh, it's cool. Really something. Anyways, brings us to our next match, which is Dynamite Kid. Unless you had anything else to say about Sakurada, Hito, and Keith,
I mean, I've been praising them. Hito and Sakurada, they work really snug and do a lot of really good offense for the time. Keith, his stock is rising a bit in my eyes. Doesn't have the personality, but as an in-ring guy, he's not too bad.
No,
that's for sure.
No,
And
a nice kind of good series of matches we saw from those four.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to the next match, Dynamite Kid versus Terry Sawyer, a non-title match. 15-minute mark. The crowd is hot again. We hear Eddie shout out "Ring-a-ding-dong, Dandy," which is another one of his catchphrases. And I'll get in a quick plug for there's a comedy show here in Vancouver. Called Ring-a-Ding-Dong-Dandy, hosted by Graham Clark and Ryan Beale. And our friend Kevin Banner does the initial announcing for the show, where they just kind of Mystery Science Theater over old wrestling clips, like old shitty wrestling clips. Colt Cabana did an episode with them, or did a show with them once. It can be really, really great. Graham's from Calgary originally. That's where the name came from. And it's also one of the reasons why we didn't name our podcast that. But I was instrumental in getting them to look at some footage from the Titans of when superstar Billy Graham destroyed Bob Backlund's belt, and he was screaming and crying. So
that's awesome.
So it's good. You guys should know that people are getting to see this great footage that you guys look at.
One convert at a time.
Yeah,
is all I have.
That's all it's going to take. Yeah, that's all it's going to take is Backlund screaming at the camera. Okay, so the crowd, right away you're noticing, loves to see Dynamite get beat up. He's doing some great heel work at this point. Foley is at ringside wearing an orange Philly tuxedo shirt with Elton John glasses, as Ed calls them. He looks great. Sawyer with some, he got really whipped, really sold his whips into the turnbuckle, hit it hard. Good punches from both. Dynamite misses his, what would become his real trademark, that headbutt off the top rope. And we hear a malfunction at the junction, and he follows it up with, "And how sweet it is," which is another Edism. Sawyer gets on the O'Donnell stretch, and it sounds like this is a move that maybe he's won matches with, or the crowd just, like, because the crowd really got behind him at this point.
Yeah. It's the 70s. The O'Donnell stretch was very over at the time, believe it or not.
Sure. Both men are really working hard. And a nice suplex from a DDT position from Terry Sawyer that kind of came out of nowhere. And after a couple of counters, Terry Sawyer gets a small package for the win, and Dynamite is enraged. This was really good stuff, I thought.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, I liked it too. It was, you know, well, Dynamite, I mean, so fast paced. I mean, he feels so fresh in this setting. You know, just he sticks out so much because he's going at a different speed than everybody else.
Yeah.
Also, his gear in this match foreshadows the move of the Atlanta Flames to Calgary a year later.
Yeah, that's right.
Red and yellow.
The red and yellow, baby. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
He was a big contributor to that.
There's a team in Atlanta that I love. Maybe we can move them to Calgary.
I've fallen in love with your national sport, Calgary. I know I'm a bit of a prick. And Terry Sawyer, I thought, really, like I said, took a beating in this match and had some nice offense.
Yeah, and I didn't have much kind to say about him the last time we saw him, especially his promos. Like, I thought he was very stilted. But, you know, and this is, you know, this shows you shouldn't just judge someone based on one appearance whatever, because he looks good here, and he looks good on the next show we're going
to
look at.
Yeah, definitely. So it cuts to a Terry Sawyer interview, which Foley enters right away, and Terry Sawyer asks for a title shot. Dynamite interferes. It just turns into like this kind of chaos. They're all fighting over the microphone. Yeah. And Dynamite is like, "You was holding me trunks." And Foley said, "He is not legible because he's not from the British Commonwealth." And Stu enters to settle things, because this is for the British Commonwealth Junior Heavyweight title.
Yes.
And Stu actually says here, you might have an occasion here. Like, he's like, yeah, with the Queen's rules, you know, I can't upset Liz. Terry Sawyer gets a slap in on Dynamite across the crowd. I thought that was funny. And shouts out, "The chips are down!" And there's just a lot of confusion. And one more time, you hear from Foley, "He is not a British subject." And there's a fighter called Nelson Royal, who's going to face at the Stampede show. And they do agree to another match. And JR says it, or Foley says it has to be British rules, rounds.
Yeah.
Finally, an agreement is reached, but Stu says it will be the NWA rules.
Yeah, well, because Nelson Royal was the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was coming in for the Stampede Week show.
Yeah.
And the winner of Dynamite and Sawyer would get him.
Yeah.
Not the and they agree or whatever that the British Commonwealth title can't be defended between I guess Americans aren't eligible to win it for some reason.
I like that. That's a good
I wonder touch. If that's a stipulation they actually enforced over the years or what,
or if this is the first time it came up.
Because it was a new title. They basically invented this title to give something for Dynamite to hold and to have, or the smaller guys like Dynamite, Brett, Bruce, something for them to fight over.
Yeah, so that's makes why sense.
It was introduced.
So that leads us to our and that was just an awesome segment, even for all the fighting back and forth.
The whole thing that comes off is so real compared to like your typical WWE talking
scripted
segment with the interview with the microphones where everyone has their own mic and they wait their turn to speak. And this was so good. This was like a press conference, you know, gone wrong or something in sports or whatever. Well said. Just,
yeah, it really does help having Eddie just kind of have the one mic in the middle and everyone kind of trying to get
again.
To it.
Yeah, I just love like the gritty feel of old territory wrestling, where you know you never know what's going to happen. It's so unpredictable.
Yeah, for sure. So that leads us to our main event, which is Big Daddy Ritter versus Jake Roberts, and the winner to face Harley Race at the Stampede Show for the NWA title, right? The World Heavyweight title. And this match, so we talked about this being a hot crowd for those last few matches, and this is the hottest the crowd has been all night. Opens with Big Daddy Ritter working on an arm lock. Seems like the crowd has had grown at this point, I thought. Like, I mean, I guess it was just probably everyone was at their seats, but like, you know, earlier in the... in the card and in the show, you can see people just kind of wandering out the back of the big barn door in the back there. And some people are paying a little more attention than others. At this point, this had everyone's attention, and it was packed. Or it looked a lot more packed in the back there. This was a hot feud. Big Daddy Ritter loads up his glove and hits Robert's shoulder. He starts to go to work on that. A really strong stuff from Ritter. I love his selling on top of all this heel work. And we're starting to see Jake start to look like the Jake of old with his punches. And he was knowing how to work the babyface fire. Roberts blocks one of the loaded punches with his wrist and get hurts. And then returns with a chair and hits a big Daddy Ritter and tosses the chair and it cuts out on a schmoz. So it would have been a DQ. But the chair was good too. It's like the chairs you'd have in like elementary school that they don't fold up. They're like made out of like, I don't know, asbestos. I don't know what it was. Yeah. But it was a solid good old fashioned headshot from the 70s there. Just built more heat. I guess this would have meant we'll go from this. It went to, I guess we'll blend all this together. Awesome. Really good heel from, really good promo from Roberts, where he offered up the title to Ritter. And okay, so then from that, like it was really quick and really, that's what I meant, a really quick promo from Roberts and really effective. It was like literally 8 seconds. Right. But it was enough because he was pissed off and he got out of the ring right after he said it. And cut to Ritter and Foley, and there was this weird bit that again Ritter, they're both on fire as always, especially now because Ritter just finished a match. And he's like, there's two things in the world that people don't mess with: a dog chasing a car, and then one of these all broken down wrestlers chasing after Big Daddy.
Which is interesting that he brings up dog, where he's going to be the junkyard dog in a few short months.
So this was a real kind of packed episode because Eddie just kind of signs off after they leave with just not much time left. Because in the past, you know, we've seen sometimes where he just kind of gives a State of the Union and reminds us of everything. But this one's like, all right, in the meantime and in between time, see you later. So that was good. That was definitely another, you know, we missed out on our stomper there.
Yeah.
But again, we got at least three, you know, really good parts of matches and a nice main event.
Yeah. I mean, the personalities shine through and that's what carries these shows. I really like the storytelling in the Jake Roberts Big Daddy Ritter match, the
Me
psychology
too.
Of the arm being worked over, and then eventually, you know, and with the loaded glove by Ritter, where Roberts eventually is just so frustrated, you know, he snaps you know, hits hits him with the chair and also shoves the referee.
That's right, he shoved the ref. That's right.
Yeah, you know, and was totally frustrated. It all led to, like, you know, this is what it took to make Roberts agree to put up the title, just so he could get Ritter back in the ring because he wants, you know, revenge for what he did to him in this match. Just little things like that. It's just basic storytelling, but it's so important in these settings. And it makes you want to see the next match because the finish was, there was no nothing was settled. There was no clear winner. That's how you build to rematches that make money.
Back in the day. I do want to, when we finish the talking about the last one, I want to get into how I felt like these, obviously these were like handpicked and there's like a method to the madness in telling the story. But there was, you know, something that I was hoping for at the end that didn't quite come to fruition, but, we'll talk to that when we get to our final episode of the 70s footage. But before we do that, we're about at the halfway mark. So we'll take a break to hear some kind words from our friends at the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Hey, welcome back. During the break, Kelly reminded me that, again, I keep calling Heath McCoy's book, The Pride and the Passion. It's The Pain and the Passion, The History of Stampede Wrestling. Check it out. So that brings us to our last episode from the 70s. Footage that was on the WWE Network. This is about a month later, July 27th or 22nd.
Yeah, July 27th. Yeah. My second birthday.
Oh, there you go. Big day. That's great.
Yeah. We weren't living in Calgary yet, though. We were still living in Winnipeg at this time.
I see. That's cool. That's nice that it finishes that way. Yeah. So... we go right into our first match. It's Hubert Gallant versus Lindy Calder, former bodybuilder, who Eddie is quite taken with. At one point, he says, "My goodness, he's beautifully built." Do you know anything about Lindy Calder?
Just again, from wrestling data, and because he wrestled mostly in England, there's basically no results outside of his work in Stampede. And he did wrestle in Stampede throughout the 70s, as did a lot of guys from England, actually. Mm-hmm. That was a common thing. Mm-hmm. And it looked like he debuted in 1958, so he was no rookie in this match, that's for sure.
No, he looked great. He did a really great look. This would have been two baby faces, right?
Yeah, total scientific match, as they called it back then.
We learned that the first bout that we missed was Hito and Jerry Morrow that went to a draw after a five-minute overtime period. So that sounded like a barn burner. They gave them five more minutes after they demanded it. That sounded really good.
We've been missing out on Jerry Morrow.
I know, the last couple. That's a shame. He was a favorite. I think he will show up again fast forward a few years.
Most definitely.
And we learn Eddie here mentions 3 weeks from this date coming in from Japan are Antonio Inoki to do a show in Calgary along with whoever the light heavyweight title holder was and a sumo wrestler. Do you know who would have been the light heavyweight title holder at this time?
I'm thinking he's referring to Tatsumi Fujinami. Who was a huge wrestling star in Japan at that time and in the 80s.
Yep, I know the name, yeah. So that's crazy. I thought it was really interesting then that Ed starts talking about the seeds that Ed planted about a national tag tournament that sounds like it sounded really, really, a really cool idea. Because he's mentioning you get wrestlers from Japan, Canada, or like different parts of the States and Puerto Rico and Cuba. Do you know if that anything?
Don't. I mean, it's fitting that it would be something they did in Calgary with all the international flavor in the territory. This is something I should have researched before the show, but I didn't. Interesting nugget of information there.
Yeah. So we learned that this card is finishing with the main event's going to be the ladder match coming up between Jake Roberts and Big Daddy Ritter for a bag of money and the North American Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. It was at this point where I'm like, okay, we've seen Big Daddy Ritter be such a cocky prick, the pimp. All the way through this, that I thought, okay, this has to end with, like I said, the method to the madness of the episodes they selected here. We've got to see Jake winning. We've got to see Big Daddy get his just desserts at some point. Anyways, so this first match was a full match, about a 20-minute time limit. There was a long head scissors. And we also learned that Stu and Keith are going to be tagging later tonight. Eddie makes a nice comparison between Stu and Gordie Howe, the hockey player, like Mr. Hockey, passed away more recently this year, about how, because he had been playing, I guess probably at this time would have been with the Whalers, right? With his sons on the same team. Or would he be in the WHA?
Yeah, well, they would have been, that actually the coming year, so the 79-80 season was the year that the WHA teams joined the NHL.
Okay.
And he was part of the Hartford Whalers team.
I seem to remember the Houston Arrows as well. Does that sound
That was the team he played for originally in the WHA with his sons. I'm not sure if he was with Hartford in the WHA or if he joined, I think he joined Hartford when they joined the NHL after the Arrows folded, I want to say.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure about that.
But yeah, so that was a nice comparison. Yeah, you can definitely see Stu and Gordy kind of coming, being kind of cut from the same cloth.
Totally.
Just Stu used his fists and Gordy used his elbows. There is polite applause in this match, so you could tell, like, even though it was quiet, they were enjoying the exhibition as they would with these kind of technical bouts. Lindy hits some of those awesome uppercuts, almost Cesaro like. He overselled at one point on something, which was great. Well, whatever, at least he's busting his ass. And then this match faded out, so I assumed we got another draw, but then we learned that Hubert Gallant won. So here's, like, why not? Why show that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. Some of the choices, and it seems like they either show the beginning and not the finish, or they show the last few minutes of a hot match, right? Or one of the bigger matches.
Maybe camera cut out. Who knows?
I don't think so. I guess
it's the first match in the card. They're just, it's, again, this is acting as your kind of moose boosh, kind of setting up the rest of the action, maybe.
I don't know what the philosophy exactly
Me neither. And again, I think this is where some of those critiques come from.
Mm-hmm. Not saying I agree with them, just saying that you can start to get an idea about, you know, people's headspaces when they talk about Stampede. Hubert Gallant won, we learn. It's an interview, cuts an interview with Dynamite and J.R. Foley. Foley smoking a cigar, leaning on the ropes. Dynamite apparently has just got back from Japan. Would he have had one of those legendary matches with Tiger Mask at this time? Or is that this is too early, right?
Yeah, a couple of years early for that, yeah.
But he is looking dapper. He's in a nice suit. His hair is like done up nice. He kind of waves at us. Looks like he was waving at a girl in the front row, which kind of got a little bit of heat. He was awesome here. We learned that their match is a hair match coming up with Terry Sawyer. Yeah. So Dynamite addresses Terry Sawyer, and he wants to make sure that Calgarians are paying attention too. He said, "Terry Sawyer was a male nurse from Virginia. After this, he'll be a bald nurse from Calgary. How about that, Johnny? How about that?" He loves it. He's having such a good time.
Yeah.
And JR gets in his catchphrase one last time. Says, "Money does talk." He says that we're number one on the program and number one in the hearts of the fans. And Ed gets in a nice Kojak reference on the way out. Yeah. Stay tuned, Kojak.
He also calls Dynamite Tommy.
Does he? His real name. I didn't notice that. Interesting. Yeah. Another little gem of greatness from these guys.
Yeah.
Pardon me. So that brings us to our next match, which is, there we go, Larry Lane versus Mr. Sakurada. Mm-hmm. So Larry Lane at this time was the NWA tag champ with Dory Funk Jr.?
It was the Stampede International tag titles that they had.
Oh, okay. See, I thought that they were part of that tour because we hadn't seen them work at all.
No, on a previous episode, Ed mentions how they won the belts and then immediately left Calgary, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then I think then they came back just for the Stampede Week show and dropped the titles there. But Lane was a longtime Stampede guy.
Okay. So that makes sense that he would have stuck around at this point.
Yeah, he's often, you know, looked at as kind of a guy that wasn't very popular with the wrestlers backstage. He was pushed heavily as one of the top baby faces a lot of the time. And often, I think it's Brett in his book says, you know, when Lane was on top, you know, box office wasn't very good. He wasn't a good draw. And to top it off, he was an asshole behind the scenes sort of thing. So, yeah, he's not a guy who has a great reputation, that's for sure.
He's a good wrestler from what we saw. And
Kind of like a Dory Funk clone.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He's missing something character-wise, for sure. In terms of just having a knit factor. But... you know, even his promo afterwards was okay. It's a good fire between them. Good strength spot. Nice that kind of when they were, who was going to get the gut wrench off. And Larry Lane kind of worked it into an arm hold. Break it! A kid in the crowd says, break his arm! He wanted it. Wayne, we talk about Wayne Hart a lot and kind of pissing him, but he was really on his A game for this match. Just kind of, who was it? Sakurada or Larry, I think was Sakurada was on the ground and Wayne was just really sliding his finger in there to make sure the shoulders were down or were up kind of thing. So he couldn't count. So he was doing the little things. This is good. A lot of mat work. Ed mentions a Samoan guy. Do you remember this?
Yeah. I'm not sure who that was that he mentioned.
Yeah. Anyways.
But he talked about it. It's someone who had the same tribal tattoo as Peter Maivia.
That's right. That's why I kind of thought it might have been somebody close to that.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of that family or, you know.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. But I'm not sure.
Anyways, there's an extended hammerlock. Nice pile driver out of nowhere from Sakurada. He has a great nastiness and is a real solid athlete. Nice slap exchange. Gives Larry the advantage against... It leads into a really great fast rope sequence that leads to a win from Larry Lane. I thought this was a nice match, a nice little build, and a good finish.
Yeah, I kind of drifted a bit during this one. Yeah. Lane just isn't very interesting to
me.
But Sakurada is great.
So Larry Lane... promo, like I said, he's offered a title shot. He's out of breath. And that's what I said. I bought his desire. He's kind of blue collar the same way that
right.
Keith is.
But
yeah, backstage asshole. There you go.
Allegedly.
Well, that'll explain why, you know, you got to come up with theories as to why this guy, you know, if he's working with Dory Funk, he must have had at least some rub.
Stu. Stu was the guy in charge of pushing people, so he must have liked them.
Mm-hmm.
He kept going back.
Yeah,
to
yeah. Anyway, so that leads us to this really heated match: Hair versus Hair, Dynamite Kid versus Terry Savage or Terry Sawyer. 2 out of 3 falls. We learn it's square 1-1. They had seconds in their corner, Foley and Brett. It was hard hitting. The crowd is losing their collective minds, and it really felt like a fight. There was a "Go Terry, Go" chant from the crowd. A nice sunset flip where the film kind of got spliced in the middle of it. Do you remember this? That was really
little
moments like that. Big suplex again from Terry Sawyer. Great work from both. Dynamite Kid misses his headbutt again. We get our malfunction at the junction. The crowd is just dying for Sawyer. Abdominal stretch again to get the crowd super hot. Okay, and then this at point, Foley and Brett get involved. Brett gets Foley's cane and is holding, Sawyer grabs Foley so Brett can hit him with it. Foley dodges and Brett hits Terry Sawyer after a long delay. This all happens so quickly, but when Brett hit Terry Sawyer, there was at least a good second and a half where Brett had a chance.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, to kind of change his mind. But he clocked him good there. And Dynamite Kid gets the win. And the crowd is shocked and furious when Dynamite and Foley start to celebrate. Man, this is good pro wrestling heat here.
Yeah, totally. And actually, it was title versus hair. It was It was the Commonwealth title from Dynamite's Commonwealth title versus Sawyer's hair.
Cool. So Dynamite was never up for it. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the first time they put the belt on Dynamite. It's the first time we'd ever seen it. Mm-hmm. It looked really nice. Like a nice silver shield on the front. Looked fresh because apparently it was, right? If they had.
It was only a few months old, I think.
Pardon me. So Dynamite puts it on and struts out of the ring. And this cuts to a hairdresser. A leopard print smock shaving Terry Sawyer in the center of the ring. And this is when I talked about, you know, I've really grown. I love these episodes and watching them with a closer eye. But when it's maybe this is another problem or another reason why people have never been into old Stampede shows is when you just kind of have it on in the background and you're doing something else. And occasionally you'd look up and it's just like it's still this woman trying to shave this guy's hair and kind of starting with it. And the razor's not working. So then it's just like this extended thing where she's just drying off and like trying to get the sweat down in his head. So they have to fade out and then come back to him later in the shaving thing and stuff. But it's like, why are you showing this? You know what I mean? It made sense because it finally built up to him. I think this is the first time I've seen ever. I mean, part of it's because he's a baby face or he's supposed to be at this point. We learn later he's just bubbling over. But he was just sitting there peacefully while his head was getting shaved. You never see that in wrestling when someone's getting their head shaved. Usually they have to be like put into a sleeper or held down at least.
Right. Well, I mean, he's a baby face, so the honorable thing is, you know, you'll go ahead with the stipulation. Mm-hmm. But the look on his face, though, is of pure disgust.
He's just like, fuck this shit.
Totally, like, thinking you just... he was selling it on his face that he knew he was going to go after Brett. Because Brett totally screwed him. And you're right, like the Kane shot by Brett, it wasn't timed very well. Because it's not like they were teasing that Brett did it on purpose. And that Brett is actually the heel. To a viewer, if you're looking at it, it's like, Brett obviously had a chance
to change his mind.
Back. Because it wasn't like a split second thing. So I don't know.
I laughed hard at that. I thought that was so funny.
The whole thing is hilarious. Because he can't get his head, or they can't get his head shaped properly. It's like even worse than Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania. They tried to shave his head. Because they barely take any hair off. And then he snaps and goes after Brad. And then doesn't Jake get into the ring
too? Right.
He gets beat.
Sawyer
just is totally enraged. And Brett's like afterwards, like, old. Geez, I'm, you know, all I can say is I'm sorry.
It was an accident. Anyway, I thought that the hairdresser just seemed like a super hip lady for 1979.
Oh, yeah, totally. She must have been working downtown.
I thought it was great that it really did seem like he did just finally bubble over, and out of nowhere, he just snapped and got up from the seat and hit Brett. And that's when Roberts entered, and Brett apologizes in a brief interview. it was good, but, they could have compacted up the head shaving part. So then we get to see back in action, the legendary Stu Hart teaming with Keith Hart against Duke Savage and John Foley, a dream match. The referee is a referee we haven't seen before. I call him P.S. Jackson. And
is that his name?
Ed takes a shot at him. It says he's pear shaped. Like, that's not you gotta mention that, asshole. We see Stu repeats a sequence a couple times that really works. It's just like, you know, he's an older guy now. And this is the same. This match had pretty much the exact same structure as the Brett and Stu match against Stomper and Foley that we watched earlier. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, like, he was doing these same moves and it had, like, the exact same finish, but whatever. Like, the crowd was loving it. And, you know, you're working with an older guy here, so, you know, why complicate things? Keith Hart throws on the figure four. Foley stops it. Foley gets in a few shots and tags out. Foley sucks chant from the crowd. Keith gets a double drop kick on both of them. Tags Stu, who's going after Savage, and Foley's pounding away at him in the back, and he's just no-selling any of his punches because he's just concentrated on throwing those close uppercuts that can look stiff at sometimes, but at this time... Savage was really helping to sell by literally jumping with each one, you know, and it almost made it look a little more cartoony than usually with Stu's punches were.
Right.
But as he's thrown, remember, he's suddenly thrown into the ropes and gets hung up nastily.
Yes, I was so surprised that he took a bump like that. He was 64 years old at this time, ladies and gentlemen.
His neck and foot are just like stuck.
Yeah,
in
it's like the old Foley head getting stuck in the two top ropes.
Yeah, but throw added with his little thing of getting the foot in there too.
Yeah,
yeah. Did not expect that. That was the one big difference from the match with Brett and Stomper was that spot. And it's the same finish where he gets out, or where Stu is thrown against the ropes and kind of jumps over Savage, or jumps over Foley, but then Cold Cox, I guess Savage in this point. And it was really great to see Stu drop for the pin and then try to wake up Savage after the knockout punch. So here's Savage. If this, like I said, that you had mentioned, this is near the end of his Stampede career. Mm-hmm. Just kind of one more time, making sure, the hometown hero looks like a million bucks. Cause he did not come to, he got dragged out of the rig. And that was a really nice touch. You get the idea that
Foley keeps his heat too, because he didn't get pinned or anything.
Foley has to come in to check on him. This was a 5-year angle, like I said. Yeah. He's like, what Eddie says, we have to get the meat wagon to get Duke Savage out of here. As they pull him out, JR was chatting or challenging Stu. Do you remember this? Just as it was really up, but I guess it didn't really amount to anything. So talking about the last time he wrestled, he got all busted up. It's kind of cool to see Stu in this post-match interview because you kind of get the feeling he's like, yeah, I've done this many times. I'm one of the boys again for a second here. He's like, all I had to do was lower the boom on him. That's great. Mm-hmm. He's still doing what he does. So that was cool. Sawyer comes back at this point, and now he's just shaved to the cue ball state.
Totally
shits on Brett,
gleaming white.
Just shits on Brett and challenges him. And this was a good fiery promo from Sawyer. He's officially made the switch from face to heel. And that brings us to our main event, which is the ladder match. This wouldn't have been their first ladder match, would it?
Between Roberts and Ritter,
not this first Stampede ladder match.
No, remember the first one was Crawford and Torre Kamada. That's right.
And that was on I think that
72.
Yeah, was that on one of their ladder match?
No,
DVDs?
I believe
I think this
match,
one was. You're right.
This one's on one of the WWE DVDs.
I'm pretty sure.
Is it the it's the ladder match?
I think so. It's kind of like seen as like here's the start of
this. I'd seen this before.
Yeah, me too. The crowd is electric. I mean, why not? Because we should mention it's a lean-to ladder. It's got up there, leaned up against the rafters next to this bag of money, and
with two referees having to
hold it up. That's hilarious. Yeah. Here's where we mentioned earlier, starting to see some of that trademark Jake offense with his punches, and I love the way he throws that kind of right hook where. It kind of finishes with him like having to kind of stretch out. You know what I'm talking about? Just looks great. And we'd see it for many years to come. This is when Eddie's like, they call it a ladder match. Like he's having to kind of explain things. It bends after JR is thrown into it, the ladder, and JR pulls Big Daddy Ritter through a rung. Do you remember this? He has one of his legs pulled through a rung and takes his boot off, hits him. And then, Sandy Scott tosses the boot outside. As I mentioned, two refs to hold the ladder up. Roberts climbs. Ritter gets him. Big Daddy Ritter gets the boot back. Jams Jake Roberts in the throat with it. Super hot match. Roberts whips Ritter onto the back of the, like a hard spot into the ladder. Both men are down. Foley is still in his gear from earlier in the episode we should mention. And Roberts gets tangled up in the ropes. So Ritter climbs, gets the belt and the wad of cash, and they're still banging away. This is a really funny image to wrap up this episode because it's just the schmoz and the madness and the heat and the anger is still going on. And after seeing this heel, who, like I said, we've seen so much of him, I really wanted to see him get his just desserts, but no. And so it's just as they're pounding away, they just kind of cut to this wide shot of Ed in his wide collar shirt and suit just to the next thing saying, we got to go. We'll see you next time. Like kind of like wrapping things up with the in-between.
Yeah.
It was a really funny image to wrap things up.
Yeah, it's funny how it was filmed when Ritter goes up the ladder. You can't see the top. Mm-hmm. So you just see him go up, and then you just kind of see the bottom of his feet.
Yeah, and it's
and then he comes back down.
And it is that kind of that silence money. You get from a hometown crowd when they lose a big game. It was
big time.
Yeah,
because Roberts had held the title for I think about 3 or 4 months at this time. Like you said, I mean Ritter's been running roughshod through the territory since late 78.
Yeah, it was just about a full year here.
Hasn't got his comeuppance.
Well, what was, how much longer, or how much more time did Jake spend in Calgary?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked, because I do have a few notes here to, like, tie up the loose end, since this is it.
Fantastic.
For us. We're not going to look at any more footage from this time, unfortunately. Jake would be gone in a few weeks.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
You know, what would happen with Ritter is he would face Larry Lane next. And it was only a few weeks after this that Lane would defeat Ritter for the belt.
Ah, that's a shame.
And that would be the end for Ritter.
Uh-huh.
And both Ritter and Roberts go to Mid-South Wrestling. Roberts' father, Grizzly Smith, was a big guy behind the scenes there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was kind of the relationship that Roberts had established with Ritter was what got him to bring him to Mid-South.
Mm-hmm.
Later in 79, and actually when they first both go to Mid-South, Ritter becomes the Junkyard Dog,
yeah.
But he's a heel at first, and they redo the feud that they had in Stampede, basically. They have Roberts and Junkyard Dog have a feud right off the bat in Mid-South.
Yeah, I think I've seen at least one of those matches.
Yeah, maybe. But by the end of 79, JYD turns face, and the rest is for him in that part of North America.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he becomes a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, 1980... They do a feud, of course, with Junkyard Dog, the blinding angle with the Freebirds. Michael Hayes blinds JYD. It leads to a huge match at the Superdome in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Dog collar match between JYD and Michael Hayes in a cage mm-hmm. that drew like 30,000 people, which was at the time one of the top drawing shows in wrestling history.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, and he'd become a legend in that part of
and
the country.
And the next thing, cut to a few years later, and he's a cartoon on Rock and Wrestling.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he would become one of the most recognizable faces
still is,
in wrestling
still is.
In the 80s and to this day, yeah. Another One Bites the Dust is his music.
Yeah, it's changed, evolved to grab them cakes, which I never really understood. What is that? Is that just the Hungry Dog?
Maybe. It's something to do. I always thought it had something to do with dancing, like a, you know, kind of, I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And also Jake Roberts himself becomes,
of course,
one of the most recognizable faces in wrestling.
Yeah. And we're still talking about him today. I just had that documentary come out. He's had quite the life, that's for sure.
Yeah. So it's interesting that we got to see them here just on the, you know, the precipice of them becoming legendary wrestlers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have any other developments in terms of feuds, or did you just follow up?
No, that was sort of the only one I looked up because I was
good.
Interested.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to know how much longer they were in the territory. I knew it wasn't too long.
Yeah, I definitely got the idea that if Jake didn't go over here, that he wasn't long for this world. By that, I mean the Stampede world.
Yeah.
Cool. I was thinking we should quickly, before we kind of close the book here on the 70s footage, name our MVP. Maybe I feel like we're in the same boat just from what we've talked about.
That's a tough one because there's for me Ritter. Yeah,
that's Foley. What I immediately thought of. Overall performer, I'd say Ritter. Then honorable mention to Dynamite.
I mean, and then John Foley has to be in the mix.
Yeah.
That's I think your big three.
Yeah.
Right there as like the overall MVP. But Ritter, I mean, and he was the main event guy the whole time throughout all this footage, was great on promos, was great as a heel in the ring, I thought.
Definitely.
But those are the big three, Foley, or Ritter, Foley, and Dynamite Kid. Those three were just awesome pro wrestlers.
Yeah.
In this whole, footage we just watched.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really cool if we get, like, even if they just do something like this with 1980 now, that just like the same things, just to, because what is also really kind of cool to see is to just see someone like Brett develop before our eyes, you know, that's, that would be really, really cool to go further into. When does he go up to WWF? When does that happen?
Bret Hart, 84.
Yeah, so there's still...
I mean, he's got... Yeah,
a lot. You know, we're seeing the the elements of the excellence of execution, but it'd be really cool to see it, start to, like I said, evolve.
Oh yeah, and there's so much cool stuff up ahead, and there is footage out there of the early '80s of Dynamite and Bruce Hart, for example. They have some really great matches. Bret Hart, of course. So I mean, it's bits and pieces out there. It would be great if they could put up more episodes, you know, with the same quality, the master tape footage.
Okay.
It's bittersweet now because coming to the end of this, because this is it, you know, we had a great time watching these six episodes, but that's all we have. Yeah. And it sucks because I would watch these all the time. They're great. They're so much fun.
Yeah. For a number of reasons, obviously we have our nostalgic, attachments, but also this is good pro wrestling, good storytelling, you know, great characters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know, indicative of why this was an important territory. I think, you know, it says a lot that we heard, like I said, we heard so many names who are just kind of making their stops, along with the kind of, you know, international flavor they already had in their regular roster, that this was a big time player, and it, you know, deserves to be discussed as such. Like it was like, what, like, I don't know how you would know this more than me, how serious a territory, or how, you know, important a territory was Calgary at its peak seen as, or just overall, you know, as a you know, notch on the history belt.
You know, it was always handicapped by its, you know, the geography of it being in Canada, being in the prairies, you know, not close to other territories, really. Then if you did go to the territory, we talked about the long drives you'd have to make. And you were also getting paid in Canadian money, which wasn't always on par with the American dollar. So there was a lot of strikes against it. So as far as importance, like, it wasn't ever one of the more important territories, just because it wasn't financially a big territory, but it was, you know, as far as developing guys, it was pretty important. It developed a lot of guys that would be big stars, and they had the, like we've talked about, the international flavor, a great mix of talent always. You know, it was always entertaining. You had, you know, veterans, you had young guys, you had guys from Japan, guys from other countries, and then you had, you know, Ed holding it all together, and there was a great continuity throughout the years. I mean, Ed was always there, Stu was always there.
Same hard camera in the same spot.
Yeah, same arena, the Victoria Pavilion.
That big W, Section W. We always got a view of Section W.
So if you were in Calgary and watching this from the 50s throughout to the 80s, I mean, it was like a family story.
An institution, I mean, right?
Yeah, it's great, because then eventually Stu's sons were old enough to wrestle, and, you know, I can only imagine, like, if you were able to see it develop throughout all that time.
Sure.
You know, that's so cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, from this, we're going to fast forward to the times when Kelly and I were just really, you know, getting to our formative years as wrestling fans, basically, right? For me, especially, we've, you know, tried to pinpoint a key storyline that I remember somewhat clearly. So I think we'll look to see if it holds up, because we're really changing it. This is when we're going to, like, Bruce booking at this point, right?
Yes.
So, you know, as familiar as we talked about these shows feeling, I feel like this, you know, we might start to notice some differences, and you know, this, for even though, like, you know, people do talk about Stampede in certain eras, this time when we were really kind of starting to fall in love with it is not a time that they is considered as legendary. Is that fair to say?
Or at least? I guess in the, like, the grand scheme of things, like, as far as, you know, like a wrestling historian's view as, like, what eras were the most successful and had the biggest names or whatever. The late 80s, I guess, wouldn't be it, but it's for most wrestling fans who are familiar with Stampede today, the era they know, because it's the one with the most footage available, but also because of the names associated with it, like Chris Benoit and Brian Pillman and Owen Hart. And those guys who all become big stars in the 90s. So, yeah, it was still hot territory, though. And yeah, we'll get into all of this. You know, it's a different era, but there's a lot of really fun stuff here, mm-hmm. and I'm interested to revisit it because I haven't watched a lot of it.
Not in a long time. Since, yeah.
No, not really. So
great. So we're looking forward to that. Kelly, you have anything coming up down the pipe? I heard you're talking about recording a new Titan soon.
Yes, actually, later tonight we're recording Titans with the original crew talking WWF 1982. It's the last 1982 show, and things are kind of going out with a whimper if you've been following along.
Sounds like it.
The quality of the wrestling is kind of nosedive.
The quality of Billy Graham's skin has been...
oh, God. Yeah, and Parv is just, you know, it's torture for him. It's torture for Pete also, because those guys really, you know, they enjoy their work rate and their great matches, and we're not really getting much of that, but we're still getting a lot of fun characters and just
and you're total staying comedy. Committed to the cause, man. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, we're going. I mean, we got, so 82 will be done, and 1983 is... It's the last year of the original set.
That's right. Cool.
And it's the last year for Bob Backlund as WWF champion.
So the big, getting to a crossroads here. That's really cool.
Yeah. So it's we're doing that later. And so that's the most immediate thing I have going
on. Cool. I've still got Lucha Afterground going on. We're going to record again this Saturday after reviewing Wednesday's episode. Teaser is a really good main between Ray and Chavo, kind of a send-off feud, really good. Loser leaves Lucha. Excited to talk about that. Excited to hopefully get some more followers. This is definitely the most people we've had listening to us ever, but we want to keep going, you know, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and having a lot of fun doing that, and we appreciate the good feedback we're getting here. But we want more feedback from you guys in terms of what we're doing here at at this History of Stampede show. Are there certain matches you want us to look at? Are there, you know, do you feel like there's some stuff we've unfairly omitted? Anything like that? Anything like good or bad? Let us know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please do.
Beyond that, anything else going on, Kelly?
No, that's all.
All right. Well, in the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Stampede Wrestling. Bye now.
We're a-heading for the roundup, going to the big stampede. Old Dick Cosgrove riding in the lead. The old chuck wagon rattling, the snorting bucking prongs. We're a-heading for the Calgary Stampede. Get around the old chuck wagon and get yourself some grub. Flip them flapjacks over in the pan. Old Jim Ross the cookie, he sure can throw her up. Well, his chuck is good enough for any man. Oh, we're a jolly bunch of cowboys, we hope you are the same. We have no cares, the laws we never heed. Gather in the circle and sing this roundup song. We're heading for the Calgary Stampede. Ah, deedle-o-de-lay, oh, deedle-o-de-lay, oh, deedle-o-de-lay, 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 deedle-o-de-lay. Bucking Bronx is snorting and cowboys riding high. Longhorns pawing up the big corral. Awaiting for the battle and a bellerin' in the chutes. And cowboys yelling, ride 'em to their pals. The guy that rode old Steamboat, Jack Manley is his name. A better pal a cowboy never knew. The way that guy could toss a rope, he'd take a leading hand. And if you're stuck, he'd always see you through. Pick your yourself a sweetheart and join the cowboy ball. Oh, huck 'em up and give 'em all a whirl. Whoopee! Oh, ask 'em how they'd like the life of a cookin' on a ranch, and tell 'em all you wish they were your gal. Oh, we're a jolly bunch of cowboys, we hope you are the same. We have no cares, the laws we never heed. Oh, gather in the circle and sing our roundup song. We're heading for the Calgary Stampede. Hi-dee-da-do-da-day, oh-dee-da-do-da-day. Oh, little old lady, oh, little old lady, oh, little old lady, oh, little old lady.